And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka. The timing sucks because the Mavs are ass. But did you see his no-look pass? Whoa! Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka.
Welcome to 77 Minutes, the Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Tim Cato. We've got Mike Pelucci on this episode. And we've got you. We're going to do a listener question show. And so this is the podcast for the people. Now, this episode, it's by the people as well. What do we think of that, Mike?
Probably better than by us. I trust them more than I trust us. You know, and it's only fair. I mean, listen, you guys are the heartbeat of the show. You listen to the only Dallas Mavericks podcast out there, right? There could be other podcasts if you weren't listening to this one.
Right. I still think eventually somebody will have another one, but right now we are kind of the only
option. But if we keep the listeners happy, then why would you need to do another one? Which is why we're answering the questions.
All right. So I solicited questions on Twitter, and I tossed it in the Mavericks subreddit. So I'm just going to pull things from there, and we'll see where it goes. You want to start off with something a little bit lighter? Adam
Absolutely.
Rosenfield asked on Twitter, what comes first, Dogecoin at $1 or KP plays in a full playoff series?
Ooh, that's
Dogecoin. Dogecoin? Is that actually how we're saying it? I mean, obviously I've read that word a billion times.
Yeah, I know.
I think generally I've got thoughts that I'll leave off this podcast, but
well, okay, here's the question. What is the current value of Dogecoin?
Dogecoin is like it's like 60 cents or something. Honestly, maybe I'm even off on that. But I knew that it's been under a dollar for a while, and the bet is, you know, very similar to some of the others. I think Kristaps plays a full playoff series because I think he plays it this year.
I was about to say that. I agree. I think if nothing else, the fact that they have, I mean, we basically haven't seen the guy for a while, a couple weeks. I think they are very much going to calibrate this to make sure he's on the floor in this playoff series because they saw what happened last year. No one is saying that they necessarily beat the Clippers with Kristaps Porzingis, but he was so good and his absence was so felt that they certainly have asked themselves, I'm sure, what if he were healthy? So I think that is, after getting out of the play-in tournament, because that's priority number one. Priority number two is make sure that he can play the entire playoff series because you also need to know what you have with him right now, right? Like this team ain't winning a title, but you at least need to take a step forward. And if that's not winning a playoff series, that's at least seeing what your personnel can do in a playoff series on the floor together. Last year, we didn't get a sense of what Jalen Brunson would have provided. We didn't get a full sense of what Kristaps Porzingis provided. If nothing else, I'm sure they're not going to go home happy if they don't win a first round series. But if everybody's on the floor and contributing, at least you feel a little bit better about, okay, I have a more complete picture of what this team looks like in a playoff environment. And that will inform what decisions they might make ahead of a very pivotal offseason.
There's a lot of Porzingis that has been asked in these questions I've solicited. So I think we're going to stick on him for a little bit. Hunger Ghost on Reddit asked, can KP be healthy for four straight playoff series in any imaginable scenario?
I mean, I can imagine a lot of things. I mean, okay, define healthy, right? Like, does that mean if there's a rest game in round two to keep him healthy, does that count? Or are we assuming healthy means you're going hard night in, night out?
I think so. I think a rest game in the playoffs, in the postseason is so, you know, if that's what it comes to, I have concerns.
I don't disagree. Right? I'm just trying to imagine the parameters because, yeah, you don't want it to come to
sure.
I mean, look, it's, you never know. It's, there is so little, I know this is a cop-out answer, but like we talked about this when Tim did the feature a couple months ago about, you know, getting KP back to full health and what that entailed. We know so little about what goes on behind the scenes of sports science, but we know especially little with Kristaps Porzingis. Do I think that this is something that is right now at this moment in time when he's missed several games? Am I going to be overly optimistic about that? No. But is it possible? In some scenario, it could be possible. All you need is the right run of health for the right couple months. And it's also worth noting, right? We haven't seen this team really have a normal season of play with him on the court and a real consistent game plan designed around keeping him playoff ready and playoff healthy, right? Now, we talked in the show before about maybe the move is keep Kristaps Porzingis at 60-65 regular season games so you can maximize his postseason utility. I don't know if that's what the organization is thinking, but let's play devil's advocate. If they agree that maybe there is some rest plan that needs to be built in, and I think that's a fairly safe bet because we've seen that this year, well, who's to say if they finally, you know, going into next season or the year after, when they have a sense of full normal schedule with actual normal rest built in, and Porzingis starting the season at zero at sort of a neutral point versus playing catch up from an injury, and they can actually implement a program of rest throughout the year, who's to say that doesn't pay dividends in the postseason and he is fresh? I just think that there's so little that we know, and no small part because there hasn't been a normal season where he's been here. You know, year one is the bubble year. Year two is this year, which is normal for nobody. So my best hope for optimism that it could happen is they have not had a full normal year with him to implement safeguards. And if they do that, then maybe that does pay these dividends. But right now it's such an unknown.
According to my Twitter sidebar, Dogecoin has soared 40% to 54 cents. So it is, there are even more efficient ways to launder money now. I'm always struck by Kristaps, and when I wrote that story, and when you take such a deep, detailed look behind the scenes at all the work that's being, you know, that's going into keeping Kristaps healthy, I think it's easier to be optimistic, or at least to, you know, when you understand the breadth of the work that, you know, both the training staff and Kristaps is putting in, you think, yeah, it's going to happen. Like look how preventatively they're working. You know, like look at the full scope of it, the hours and the time. So I want to say, yeah, I want to say that he's going to be a healthy player and, you know, that, you know, he'll get injuries a little more often than people than other players, but all things considered, he's going to be fine. But the evidence is not on his side whatsoever. And I think, you know, even beyond the major knee, you know, the knee surgeries he's had, you know, in 17 and 19, 18 and 19, whenever they had those. Even beyond that, the idea that he's always nagging, you know, always has a nagging injury, a sprained wrist, a sprained ankle, that constantly, you know, it was like this in New York too, where he'd always pick up these small minor injuries. Even if he maxes out his potential, if you're thinking that a two-star team, Luka Kristaps, with better role players around them, is going to win the title, all it takes is one injury. Like the whole idea of having three superstars is, the third one is a preventative measure for if the second one gets hurt. And, you know, how many times has Kristaps made it through even a 6-week period in the regular season without, you know, just missing a game here or there? And missing a game here or there is okay in the regular season, and that you can plan around that. You can adjust and survive that. It's much harder to survive that in a conference finals when, you know, the margins are already so slim and small. Consider me worried. I do think that, you know, this has to be a referendum of some degree, this coming postseason, really this coming stretch run. Porzingis needs to be healthy. I mean, if he's not, you know, it's a paradox. If he is, then he's going to be more tradable. You know, if he really shows out, he's going to be more tradable. If he doesn't, he's going to be less tradable, but you're also going to have more, you know, desire to trade him, I guess, in that scenario.
It opens up options, right? I mean, in some ways, if we're thinking big picture, the realistic best case scenario for the Mavericks isn't about what the outcomes are in this postseason. It's Porzingis having a great series and proving that he could be on the floor, because either A, that gives you more confidence for building around him and Doncic, which is the preferred plan, or B, it probably helps spike some of his trade value if you do want to explore alternatives.
Do you think Porzingis will be here next season? Electronic Pool asked that on Reddit.
As of now, yeah. I mean, you never know. The thing that this front office has proven time and again is that they find trade scenarios and pull those trade scenarios off, not only stealthily, but they pull off ones that you or me or whoever don't necessarily think are possible. So I could sit here right now and say I can't think of a realistic better fit that they can get, but that has not stopped them before, because if realistically I didn't think they could get Kristaps Porzingis when they did. Gone to my head though, right now, yeah, I still think he's here to start next year. I think the goal is use the cap space you have in a productive manner in the offseason, add some talented player around the group that they have and see where that takes you before you start blowing it up from there. It's hard for me to envision Porzingis being gone by, you know, 4 months from now, more or less. I don't know. Where are you at with that, Tim?
I'm the same way. It's just I can't see any realistic scenario where you're actually getting something, you know, a player or players back that has higher heights than what Porzingis could represent if you can get him healthy and playing well for a consistent period of time. But yeah, I mean, just the idea that his future on this team is so... It's the same conversation we had when the trade rumors came out earlier this season. And I just think that you have to view him as just the same as you do the role players. Like if he's... If you can deal him and bring back players that are going to help Luka win a championship, there's no romantic attachment, you know, or romanticized attachment to Porzingis and Luka as a star duo. There is only Luka. And that's what matters to this team, and that's how they're building it. And if Kristaps is a victim of that, you know, if he is, you know, used to make the team around Luka better, you do that. Mason 77 or 744 on Twitter asked if Luka wins a championship with the Mavericks, is Porzingis on the team? And then I got a similar question from Sheck the Shrek. Do you think Luka and KP's relationship can be repaired if they have success, i.e., winning the first round in the playoffs? Which, yeah, I mean, this is all similar, but just the idea that their relationship, it does seem more likely than not that if the Mavericks win a championship that, you know, I think it's without Porzingis. And I think that might be just recency bias a little bit, but yeah, it does seem like Luka and Kristaps winning a championship together just seems very distant after the past few months. I'll conclude like that. I'm just saying the same thing over and over again.
So yeah, and you know, and like, look, here's the thing. I won't even necessarily frame that just from a relationship perspective, right? Because I don't think we know the full picture, but setting that aside, just from a personnel standpoint, the league adjusting to drop coverage and finding answers for it has really, that's been a big game changer for why on an on-court perspective, no matter, even if they were best buds, from an on-court perspective, that's what complicates us a lot. If that hadn't happened, I think we'd feel a lot better about the defensive ability for Porzingis to be on the floor in all scenarios. But that changing and the league evolving and just a 7'3" guy, even an athletic one like Kristaps, only having so many ways that he can adapt to that, that's what makes this tricky, because there are, and this sounds crazy, but this is true, there are certain matchups that you look at in these Western Conference playoffs and you start wondering, can he stay on the floor in a way that doesn't let them bleed points? You know, Tim and I wrote this morning, we did a little back and forth conversation about what the next 2 weeks look like before the playoffs. And we were discussing, you know, one of the scenarios Tim's posed is, you know, if let's say they escape the play-in tournament, would you rather play Denver? Would you rather play the Clippers? And my answer, both of our answers were Denver. But one of the factors for both of us is Porzingis specific, in that Nikola Jokic being on the floor means you know that Porzingis could stay on the floor, because Denver is not going to do anything super small or super wing heavy without it running through Jokic. So that means Porzingis will be involved. Whereas if they play the Clippers, I could see some scenarios in which they try to run or space the floor in a way that is not conducive to keeping Kristaps Porzingis on it. We've seen Rick Carlisle close games with Porzingis on the sidelines because that's what he felt was the best option. That's not to say that Porzingis, even if there are defensive questions sometimes, doesn't do a ton on offense to help, because he absolutely does. It's not to say he's a bad player, because he's certainly not. But if this is your second star and we are now in where the NBA is at this moment in time, wondering, can he be on the floor in all scenarios? That is very problematic when your best player is not someone who is a defensive asset. And Luka, I would say Luka's certainly improved defensively. He's less of a liability than he was 2 years ago. There's no question. But already, if your two best guys are people who are not defensive assets in the modern NBA, that's tough. That's very tough.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So ZBrand on Twitter asked, when will Rick make the adjustment to strictly have KP at the five, opening the floor for more shooters? I think that, you know, for the Mavericks to maximize what they can be, it obviously involves Porzingis on the court. When he's moving at his best, he's still capable of being out there on the perimeter. It's obviously not, you know, something that you want all the time. You're going to try to get him closer to the rim when you can. But, you know, it is very clear that the Mavericks' best lineups need to be with KP at the five. I think that's clear. I think both his defensive limitations as a perimeter defender and Maxey's limitations that, you know, he's not going to be able to attack closeouts that often, hasn't proven to consistently do that. Also just isn't quite as dynamic of a defender as he was even a couple of years ago, you know? So I do think that the lineups that the Mavericks need to succeed are Porzingis led lineups. You know, I still think that there's going to be two look sets. I think it depends on who you play. I think if you play the Clippers, you're gonna have a lot more of KP as the only big man on the court. And if you play Denver, you have more flexibility to get Powell out there for stretches. Certainly get Kleba out there, even with, you know, with Porzingis, not just only serving as his backup. So yeah, I think you'll have a chance to do that. I don't know when Rick will do that necessarily. I don't think it's necessary for them to kind of shift over to playoff looking lineups. I think everybody on this team, you know, they've had so much continuity that they know how to play together. And I think that they can, you know, you can adjust for a postseason opponent and just be, you know, be ready to make that switch. In the meantime, you know, I think the two big lineups have worked well. And so I don't know if there's like an imminent adjustment coming. I just think that, yes, we're going to see a lot of KP at the five if it's the Clippers. And I think that's just crucial for this team to be as good as, you know, to be a potential playoff upsetting team, something like that. Then it definitely requires Porzingis at the five.
Yeah, and I think one thing that, you know, look, we're not seeing as many adjustments right now for probably a couple of reasons. One, I think Rick has to probably keep, you know, the cards close to the vest, right? I mean, whatever he's going to do in the postseason, there's probably going to be some wrinkles out there that haven't been thrown out throughout the year. And the second aspect is because some of this stuff, as Tim says, is going to be matchup dependent, you can't just necessarily cut your rotation patterns or cut your sub patterns and tweak it in one certain way now. And then when you need to go another direction in a certain series, guys don't have that cohesiveness together. So I think it probably behooves everyone involved from Rick all the way down to each of the players to just go with what works on a nightly basis, mix and match, keep everybody as a viable option and a fresh option and an option that has been on the floor. It's a lot easier to cut down versus expand the menu come the postseason. You know, try more things now and hide your options now so that when you need to specialize, you need to go one direction. It's a lot easier to do that in for a 7-game set.
There's a lot of free agency and offseason focused questions. We can probably end with those for a little bit. Let's go quick hitting on some of these ones that I think we can knock out and then move on from. Mike, what the fuck is up with Mavrello? Explain. Jared Cheek asked for that, but there's a couple other people who mentioned Mavrello.
Did any of them mention it in a positive context?
I think there's a bit of confusion continuing. I don't think that anybody has any more understanding of the Mavrello idea. How much is Finney Smith really worth? $15 million player? Sound about right?
That was the number I was thinking. Yeah. About that. I mean, clearly, because what's Dwight making? 11 or 12? 11? I mean,
Dwight Powell?
Yeah,
Dwight Powell's making about 12, yeah.
Yeah, you're going to pay him a bit more than a Dwight. And I mean, the Dwight deal was probably a little more than what the market value was worth, even pre-Achilles injury. But I mean, I don't know if Dorian can be your best 3-and-D wing on a championship team, but I feel pretty sold that he can be the second best. And he's a pretty valuable.
If he's playing like he has over the past month, he can. I think that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's fair. You know, like, look, it probably is unfair of me to assume the old ceiling for Dorian has been the old ceiling because nobody on this team has improved more year in, year out. Nobody's added more year in, year out. So Right now, $15 million guy. But if you told me that there's another level still, it wouldn't shock me just because he has done so much to continually add to his game, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
That was Alyssa Baker, AllieBO2 on Twitter, asking that one. Let's see. If Rick Carlisle was a type of rock, what kind of rock would he be? Thank you to the Kobe Beef, also known as Doyle Raider, for
shout out one. Doyle, friend of the
podcast. Shout out Doyle. He's been on the podcast.
I'm not a geologist, so this is a tricky one for me. What is a rock that is, let's say, sturdy? I don't know if you know this. I'm asking you.
I was
going
to say
you.
Firm. I was just going to say a firm rock, and that's as far as I was going to go.
I was about to pose some criteria for rock and expect you to answer this like you are a geologist yourself. But you know, maybe our Twitter users, if there's a geologist among you listeners, maybe you can answer this for us when we post this. Something that is sturdy, that on the surface appears fairly dull, but has a lot of layers to it, right? Because Rick's a pretty interesting tactical mind, and Rick is, you know, going to be, you know, not necessarily mean the flashiest dude, but he knows what he's doing and understands the game extremely well. And just, you kind of know what you're getting with Rick Carlisle. It's pretty dependable. There's a reason he's been here as long as he has. So I'd say something in that vein. What that equates to, I don't know. I don't think Rick is an amethyst, for instance. Amethysts are very, very pretty rocks, very, you know, eye-popping. I don't think that's Rick's style. But, you know, a solid, sturdy, yet maybe complex rock of some sort.
Whatever type of rock he is, I can rule out Dwayne Johnson.
Indeed. Shaved head, though. They do have that in common.
How are players reacting to more and more games being cited merely by the fickle whims of three-point percentage? Which is a fun question. It's an interesting way to frame it, because I think we've talked about on this podcast how three-point percentage is kind of random sometimes. It's random on a game-to-game basis, especially determining how your opponent's going to shoot. You know, I think shots going in has always been what determined the league, you know, and who won games. But I guess, and I've had analyst type people tell me that, you know, the randomization we feel is not actually much more random than it used to be. But we look at three-pointers as a separate stat. You know, it's in the very box score. So when you have a bad three-point shooting night, it feels and it looks and it's much easier to point at than a bad long two-point shooting night, for example, which teams used to lose games off, you know, back 10 years ago when that was a key critical shot in the way the game was played.
Well, it's not just that, though. I think it's that combined with just we are experiencing so much more sort of homogeneity in terms of how teams are built and what sets that they're running. Teams play a lot more similarly than they did 15 years ago. And so when you have teams trying to play the same way in so many cases, and that same way involves maximizing three-point shots, and we can isolate those numbers better than we probably ever have, it...
Right.
And I'm speaking strictly from my sense as an observer. You know, Tim would have a better sense of, you know, the folks, the team that he's talking to. For me, though, I look and I'm just, you know, sometimes it does get a little tired when you're just like, man, this is, I'm going to watch, you know, I love the sport of basketball, but when you know that everybody's trying to do the same thing and that everything you're about to sink the next 2.5 hours into watching probably determines on whether this one thing gets done better on one side or the other. I mean, it feels very much like a solved game sometimes. And this is not the only sport that is that way, right? Baseball is absolutely in this boat of, you know, balls aren't in play anymore. So it's kind of sort of a three true outcomes game of home run, strikeout, walk. Football is becoming more and more that on the professional level, mirroring the college game of we're going to play 3 or 4 wide. We're going to throw the ball a ton, and running backs are becoming more and more fungible. So it's not just the NBA, but yeah, I think it's sometimes it can sit there and it could feel a little like, man, what is the point of this exercise if this is what we're doing out there?
Sure. There's a couple questions about Tyrell Terry, which I don't have details and probably wouldn't share them even if I did. But last I heard is he's okay, you know, health-wise and all that stuff.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back.
We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Sir Wilco on Reddit asked, what do you think about the potential for the Mavs rookies like Green or Hinton? Which indicates to me that he very clearly did not listen to last week's episode. I will refer you to last week's episode where we talked far too long about Josh Green.
So that's the Josh Green segment. I mean, Nate Hinton's got some intriguing tools. But until we actually see them in an NBA game, I mean, Josh Green was a top 20 pick. Nate Hinton was an undrafted guy. So until we see Nate Hinton impact NBA games, I'm going to assume that, you know, maybe he's more of a, you know, an end of the bench type guy. That doesn't mean that can't change. Dorian Finney-Smith was that once. Maxi Kleber was that once. And now look where they are now. But we just haven't seen enough of him on the floor and what we know from because we haven't seen him on the floor, we sort of have to lean on what we knew before. What we knew lean on before was, you know, 60 picks past, this guy wasn't drafted. Whereas there was a lot of stuff with Josh Green where he's 20 years old still and has a high pedigree and hasn't got a lot of time this year, where you can at least go, okay, well, when he gets time, you know, when he's 22 years old, there's reason to believe that this could turn out well.
Reddit account Jackie Moon 69 asked, do you think the Mavs should trade their washing machine for Ed Monix? Which I respect the bit. If that's your username, that's got to be the question you ask. It's a little throwback to, I'm blanking on the name. What's the name of that movie?
This one's over my head.
It's the Will Ferrell basketball one, whichever one.
Semi-pros.
I think that's it. So
yeah, I was the Will Ferrell arc. I feel like he peaked after Talladega Nights. It started going downhill, right? And then you had Blades of Glory, and then this was after that. And I saw Blades of Glory, and it was fine. But there are some people who really stand by Blades of Glory. Although, actually, no, Step Brothers was somewhere around there, too. And that was pretty solid. But the peak of his powers ended with Talladega Nights.
It defined an era. It absolutely defined an era. But that era, I think, is safely can be described as in the past. Brad Davis Goat asked, have the Mavericks ever had cap space? Like, ever? Good question. I can pick up the sarcasm. No need for a... Hard to say. What would a first round exit this season mean for the future of the current roster? I think the Mavericks are definitely at a place where they would make serious changes. They're ready to make serious changes, and I think they're really viewing Luka and his timeline as hey, we need to get a team together that can be a contender sooner than later. And I think after the past couple of years and just, you know, all these things considered, I think the Mavericks are at a point where, you know, they would do something. They would do something dramatic. I don't expect the same team to be back next season.
I mean, I don't even think a first round exit necessarily. I mean, I'll flip it on you. Even if they win a first round series, does any of that change? I think you got to.
That's a good point.
To actually think that this is the roster, I think you got to win two series. And I don't think that's happening, mind you. But if they win two series after the year they've had, after all the stuff they've been through, they can absolutely probably, they could tell themselves the story of, man, after all of this, we won two playoff series. We got to a conference finals. This could be it. That's what I think it takes for them to sell themselves on. This core that you see right now is coming back with maybe a piece or two augmented versus them being open to doing anything and everything that doesn't involve moving Luka Doncic.
Is there concern within the Mavs organization about KP's actual basketball abilities? Health is a clear concern, but watching him, it seems like the only time he's able to be dominant is if all of his threes are going in. That's from the Mavs man. I assume not that Mavs man. It is interesting that Kristaps looks like a player who just should hit more shots and doesn't. He's having his most efficient season of his career this year. And so I think that's, you know, but a lot of that it has come from his ability to score at the rim and generate more shots at the rim. it's interesting and weird to me that he just doesn't hit more open shots. And I don't know if we have time to like, I don't know if there's an answer. Like, I feel like I would love to ask him directly, like what he thinks of this or people on the team. But, you know, I do think that's an interesting thing I've noticed about him over the past couple of years. It was the bubble and a little bit before the bubble, before the season got suspended. Those were clearly the best stretches of his basketball career. And I don't think he's gone more than a few games duplicating that level of shot making on the offensive end all season, unless I'm missing a stretch from him. I don't think he has.
He certainly hasn't chained them together the way that he did last year.
Right. Right. I think it's a concern. I mean, I think that, you know, the health is clearly the first one, but the idea that he hasn't consistently been a good basketball player he's been a good basketball player. He's been a good basketball player all season. He has not consistently been the second star to Luka that, you know, was expected for him for longer than a month at a time. And yeah, I think you can point at that and say that's also a concern with him, which makes this coming postseason a, you know, the kind of the referendum we talked about. I think him playing well is just massive. It's so important to the future of this team, to be frank. After watching the regression of DeLon Wright last year and seeing it again with Josh Richardson this year, is that guard next to Luka is the spot of a guard next to Luka more difficult to figure out than originally thought? Or is it as simple as having two swings and misses by the front office? And that's from Taylor Beatles.
That's a really good question.
On Twitter.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I'm inclined to think it's just swings and misses. Because Jalen Brunson has looked good next to Luka. Jalen Brunson closing games next to Luka has won them games this year. You know, or even Tim Hardaway Jr., especially last year. Tim's done more without Luka this year by necessity at times carrying the second unit. But last year, there was a very clear, noticeable difference of his numbers upticking when he was sharing the floor with Luka versus when he wasn't. I mean, it's worth noting too, like DeLon Wright is now on his third team in a year. So DeLon Wright, with respect to DeLon's abilities, DeLon isn't the sort of guy who probably, that was a nice idea of maybe this guy could be a rotation piece, but I think it's clear that that's probably more about DeLon than it is Luka. And I think with Josh Richardson, I mean, gosh, you know, I don't want to necessarily think the same thing of Josh. He's clearly a better player than DeLon Wright is, but you know, I think the hope when he came here was, okay, well, Philly wasn't great, but that Philly situation wasn't great for him. Maybe a better situation will unlock him. Now that we've seen this for a second consecutive team, I mean, maybe it's Josh Richardson. I don't know. I'm convinced. I remember seeing Josh Richardson in Miami thinking there was a very good player in there. And I would still think that maybe there's something more than what he's shown this year. But I also think if we're asking the question, well, hey, is this a thing with him next to Luka? I think it's also fair to look at the other side of the coin and be like, well, maybe this is a Josh Richardson thing. So big picture, I'm not sitting there sweating this about a Luka based situation.
Yeah, I think both are true, but it's definitely in like a 20%, 80%. I think 80% of both of those situations is that the players did not play as well as they could, or just were not as good as potentially they were made out to be or believed to be for DeLon and Josh. So I do think you need a specific type of skill set and mindset. You need a specific type of guard to play next to Luka. I think that's also true. I just don't think it's the driving force behind either of these guys. And then, let's see. I think we made a lot of good ground. There's some, you know, I think the other, like I was saying, the other main theme that ran through these questions was just what are the Mavericks going to do this offseason? Who are their targets going to be? Who should they sign? I saw John Collins was, you know, name came up once or twice. I think the one interesting thing I've kind of realized about this offseason is that it's difficult to get that max cap space. Or that significant cap space we're always referring to, without the Mavericks renouncing Tim Hardaway Jr. and Josh Richardson. Or I guess in this case, Richardson also opting out, which was another question that somebody mentioned. And I still think it's most likely that he opts out, but I don't think it's guaranteed. So I don't know if it's certain that he would still opt out. But I know that was certainly the plan, and I still think the most likely scenario. At this point, it's, you know, like the Mavericks would have to be damn near convinced that they were going to get a player they felt fit the team better than Tim Hardaway Jr. to renounce his rights and let him go sign somewhere else. And, you know, with the dearth of free agents on the option on the available this offseason, I do think there's some level of question whether Hardaway is just the player who fits best. I don't like that as the answer, and I do think that there's some salary cap maneuvering that they can probably pull off to hopefully re-sign him and also still sign somebody in free agency. It might not be $30 million at Lonzo Ball or John Collins, you know, the two RFA topics we've talked about. But I don't think it's, you know, I think it's possible that you can add something while also bringing back Hardaway. But yeah, it's, I do think that they've backed themselves into a bit of a hole this summer, and that it's going to take a fantastic season, off season of work to, you know, really get this team moving in a better direction. And yeah, it has me. I guess I'm a bit more worried than I was.
I mean, I think, you know, to name something more specific, and you know, what does that cap maneuvering look like, right? How do you open up more cash? I'm sure if you're willing to attach a one to Dwight Powell, you can get off that money. I think there, you know, a lower. I mean, there's not many years left on Dwight's deal. A team that is theoretically a Houston, for instance, that is going to be rebuilding for a while and is going to have cap room. I'm sure if you want to throw them a protected first round pick to take Dwight, that might be doable. But then you're surrendering an asset to move something. And that's the key problem that this team has, and why free agency has been important, is just they got Luka Doncic because they had to basically add two assets to get one, right? It was the pick that became Trae Young and a one. And that's fine. You do that deal 1,000 times out of 1,000. But the fact is, you know, just like with the Porzingis deal, say what you will about Kristaps Porzingis and, you know, some level of disappointment or concern or whatever, what have you. If you look at what the Mavericks have traded to get Porzingis, you still make that deal today, right? Dennis Smith Jr., if you want Dennis Smith Jr. back, you can get him back this offseason for very little. Those picks are bottom half of the first round picks. You got Tim Hardaway out of this deal also. You got a useful piece in Trey Burke. You still make the same deal over again. Good trade, but it required you to surrender multiple future assets. They need to find a way to add a player of consequence this summer. That's what this comes down to. There is just not enough talented bodies on this roster. And all you have to know for why that's true is look how tight the rotation is this year. Rick Carlisle likes to play guys when he has guys to play. He doesn't trust many people on this roster because there's just not enough there. So given that, yeah, maybe you could dump Dwight's money and then you can bring somebody else in. But that means, okay, trading a future, another pick on top of that. The Richardson thing hurts really badly, not just because he didn't pan out for his own sake, but, you know, one way you could add a player is, let's say you keep Hardaway's rights, you pay Tim. If there's another team that wants a Josh Richardson, you could, you know, if Josh Richardson was playing well, you could sign and trade Josh Richardson. But, you know, because you have those bird rights, you could ink him to a deal, you could flip him. Nobody's giving Josh Richardson above mid-level money in the open market, right? Am I wrong about that, Tim? I can't see Josh getting more than a mid-level if he hits the open market the way he's played the last 2 years.
That feels right. The other nice thing about him, or would have been nice if he was having the season expected, is that his cap hold is a lot smaller than Hardaway's. So you had more ability to hang on to his cap hold, use money, and then come back and sign him.
Yeah. So that option becomes more complicated too.
Right.
So again, are there ways to manufacture more money? Sure. You know, or I mean, again, like another scenario that, you know, purely hypothetical, right? But a Dorian Finney-Smith or a Maxi Kleber, they're guys on very good contracts for role players. Very good contracts. You pair them with a Dwight Powell for another player, you get something, you know? But then, again, you were sacrificing a useful piece just to bring in another piece. The end game, somehow, some way, they need to come out of this offseason with more good players than they went into this offseason with. And when you don't have a first-round pick and you have limited cap room that might be soaked up by retaining one of your better players, one of your most important players in Tim Hardaway Jr., that's when this gets complicated. Is it impossible? No, because again, if you were looking at the two things that this team does better, I don't want to say better than any other team, right? But the two things that they've successfully done consistently for more than a decade. One of them is finding lower end guys in a rotation and turning them to better players than you ever thought that they would be. Whether that's, you know, the undrafted free agent like a Dorian Finney-Smith, or all the way up to taking somebody's discard like a Tim Hardaway Jr. and turning him into a very, very good player. They're very good at taking guys that other teams have written off and turning them into good pieces. And the other thing that they do quite well is they make trades. They trade well. You know, we could sit here and question the draft record you know, for the last 15 years of this team, and it's a valid conversation. But if you look at the trade track record, for the most part, it has gone very well for them. So there are angles that they see that we probably do not. There are probably ways to get out of this, you know, out of this predicament that we do not see. But just from the face of this, it is going to be really tricky. You know, as Tim says, it's going to take a pretty strong offseason. And it isn't going to be as simple as, you know, yeah, they failed before at bringing guys in with cap space. But at least before, it was very obvious that they had the cap space to play around with. Now, maybe they still do, but it's not as obvious as it once seemed. And I suppose, to be fair, like, part of why it isn't as obvious as it once seemed, and this is a good outcome, is that Tim Hardaway has proven himself to be a very, very good player, right? That is a spectacular outcome. Tim Hardaway was part of the tax to take Kristaps Porzingis. It was, well, we have to deal with Tim Hardaway's deal for a couple of years. Well, now Tim Hardaway has turned himself into a pretty essential player. So that is a good outcome. That's not anything to be upset about, that you want to keep Tim Hardaway around. But it's tricky. It's definitely tricky. And I'm sure there are ways that they can turn this around and manufacture them. They're just not as obvious as we necessarily thought they might have been 6 months ago.
Next time we talk about this, you know, probably the offseason, probably after their postseason run has ended, I think we'll have a better idea. Some of it, I just need to look at their cap and take a deeper dive into, you know, kind of what mechanisms they have at their disposal and how they could do some of this stuff. So when that time comes, we'll be ready. Until then, next week, you know, we'll probably be talking the close to the playoffs and where the standings is and positioning. Might have a guest on as well. Then after that, it's postseason focused. This season is almost there, almost to the end point. And I don't know if it feels like it should be almost over, or if it feels like it's been, I don't know what it feels like. I've completely lost any sense of how time should be operating, but the season is almost over. We appreciate everybody who's stuck with us this far, and should be fun. I think the end of the season will have some answers, and just a lot of intrigue. I think intrigue for sure is a good way to describe both the standings race and where the Mavericks finish, and you know, the first round that will follow after that. Very interested to learn, hopefully, a lot about the players on this team from that. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
Oh, my God. Oh! Shut it down. Let's go home. It's a wrap, Doug.
Man, that is a wrap.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.